every episode of this podcast is about true things that have happened at some point or another on this planet. Each episode is different than the next, and they are each centered around stories that are odd, outlandish, or of the occult. This podcast will include foul language. This podcast may also include themes of graphic content such as murder, rape, or gore. Listener's discretion is advised.
Hey. Hi. Hello. Yes. Hey.
Hi. Yes. Hello. No. Goodbye. Maybe. Aloha. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Welcome to another damn episode of this podcast that I named Seven Circles. Do you want to know how I came up with the name? You do? Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's best you don't know, really.
Anyways, I am Autumn and this is Dan.
Goedendag.
Was that Dutch? Geodag.
Yeah, that's how I pronounced it, yeah.
Can you pronounce it again?
Goedendag.
Goedendag. What does that mean, good day?
Yes.
You know how I know that?
Go on.
Because Dutch and English are so similar.
Oh my god. I mean, I don't even know why we consider them two separate languages. It's uncanny. It's just pointless, frankly.
Anyways. Today we have a true crime story, but don't worry, there is not much brutality in this tale. This tale is a mystery. Unsolved, speculated, conundrum-ded.
Conundrum-ded, is that? That's not even a word, man. Come on, man.
It's not a word.
It might be a word in Dutch, but of course, if it is, then it's a word in English too. So, somehow we accidentally did another true crime episode right after the last one. We said we wouldn't, but here we are. But at least in this one, there are no dildos the size of a baby's head. So,
there's that.
You're welcome.
Thanks. This is the story of Chris Krimmers and Lisanne Froon. He put numbers in there. Oh, that's their ages.
Yeah, I did put numbers in there. I thought that might be relevant. You kept calling them women, and I was like, well, technically they are. But...
Well, okay, everybody else kept calling them girls, and Chris is 21, Lisanne's 22. They're not girls, they're women.
Okay, but anyway, sure. Froon. The one time you didn't roll your R and you were meant to, Autumn.
Was I meant to?
But, I mean, you should know that, because English
Chris
and...
Chris Krimmers?
English and Dutch are essentially the same, as you said. And Chris Krimmers! Was she a fucking donut?
We don't make fun of people's names, especially if they're dead, Daniel.
Yeah, but she's basically called Krispy Kreme.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, you just ruined the whole fucking episode, dude, for God's sake.
Do they have a Krispy Kreme in Holland?
Not anymore, she died. But for the record, that would be Chris Kremers and Lisanne Froon. They are Dutch and 21 and 22 forever. Anyway.
So, Chris and Lisanne both grew up in the city of Amersfoort in the Utrecht province of the Netherlands.
This is so good because I'm actually half Dutch and I speak Dutch like a Dutchman, and this is going to amuse me throughout. That would be Amersfoort in Utrecht.
I did say Utrecht.
Oh, good God. So... Amersfoort, that's where the artist Mondrian hails from, as does, of slightly lesser fame, my mum. Mm.
Your mum's pretty awesome, though.
She really is, it's true.
Amersfoort is a...
Amersfoort. Foot. I mean, there's an R in there, and you like to roll your R's, so there is, look, right there.
But you keep saying Amersfoort.
I don't.
I said Amersfoort.
The R is after the O's. This is gonna be a fucking long episode. Just try it again. Take your time.
Amersfoort. Fart.
There it is.
Amersfoort.
Oh no. God, we're not even drunk yet. Right.
I got this. Go move.
Carry on.
Amersfoort.
It's a big city.
Okay. Amersfoort is a big city with a population of 158,000 as of 2021. It is the second largest city in Utrecht.
That was pretty good. And presumably it's the second largest city after Utrecht itself, which is in the province of Utrecht.
It's a beautiful city with a long history dating back to 1000 BC. The city has many museums, such as the Dutch Cavalry Museum, located in a barracks that is 475 years old.
I think I might have been there, but I would need to ask my mum. But I think I've been there. I feel like I can picture it.
And this is where Lisanne and Chris went to school. Not at the museum, but at a college. Lisanne graduated with a degree in applied sciences, while Chris got her degree in cultural social education. Chris was often described as being open, creative, and responsible. Lisanne was described to be aspiring, optimistic, intelligent, and sporty.
Why is there never anything bad to say after, you know? Oh, Dave was open, creative, intelligent, and liked to smoke meth and was just a bit of a dick, really.
I don't know. If people don't like to talk ill about the dead, probably that's the reason there. Just don't talk shit about dead people unless they sucked. So they had moved into a dorm together a few weeks before their trip and even worked at the same cafe called In den Kleinen Hap.
I mean, that was not the worst attempt I've heard. That was okay. Oh, God. So it's In den Kleinen Hap, and it's actually Old Dutch. They wouldn't say den or kleinen, which mean the and small. But translated, it means in a small bite. It actually happens to be opposite a bar called In a Large Sip, presumably owned by the same people, or their mortal enemies.
That's actually pretty clever. Anyway, they saved up money for 6 months in order to go on a vacation to Panama together and were hoping to learn Spanish and do some volunteer work down there. Crimmers and Froon arrived in Panama on 15...
I'm really sorry, but when you just say them by their surname and you don't pronounce them in the Dutch way, that is quite an amusing kind of stage name, if you will, isn't
it? Crimmers and Froon!
Crimmers and Froon! Yeah.
Crimmers and Froon.
Like, are they a comedy magic act or something?
Mm-mm. So they arrived in Panama on 15 March 2014. Did I write that date like that?
You actually did, yeah.
I am turning more and more British by the second. In America, we would say March 15th, 2014. But in England, they say 15th of March, 2014.
Yeah, but you missed out the so it was just fucking weird, however you look at it. They arrived in Panama on March 15th, 2014.
Mm-hmm. And they toured the country for 2 weeks, mostly island hopping and having a good time while staying in hostels. They met two Dutchmen called Bas van Lieshout and Edwin Cornelis while they were island hopping and spent some time hanging out with them. Yes, Daniel.
I'm having a lot of fun with this one. It's Bas van Lieshout and Edwin Cornelis.
Edwin Cornelis.
Yeah, that one was relatively close, yeah. Yeah, we should probably have worked on your Dutch pronunciation before we started recording, huh?
Yeah.
But here we are. It's more fun this way.
Mm-hmm. On March 28th, they arrived in Boket, Chiriquai. Boket is a mountain town located 37 miles from Costa Rica. Its main industry is agriculture, especially the growing of coffee beans.
Among other stimulants, I'm sure.
Boket is well known for its coffee, judged to be among the finest in the world. Boket boasts a very lively music and arts scene. The annual Boket Jazz Festival was founded in 2007, being the second largest jazz festival in the country after the Panama City Jazz Festival.
This amused me when I read it, Autumn. The second largest jazz festival in Panama. It's like, look at this, it's the second largest shit I took today.
Anyways, so Chris and Lisanne were staying with a local family for the next month and were set to start work volunteering at a local school called Aura. Chris and Lisanne had come to Panama with a few goals in mind. One was obviously to sightsee and tour the country. The second was to learn Spanish, and the third was to give back to the community and do some work with children. Chris and Lisanne had even collected donations of toys and money to bring to the children of Panama.
So, the school that they were supposed to begin volunteering at was not yet ready to accommodate the two women, so they had to push that plan back a whole week. Autumn was able to find the English translation of their diaries on the internet, albeit I could have just translated the Dutch version, but this is good too. Both of the women state that they felt very unwelcome when they arrived at the school. In Chris's diary, she states that her Spanish teacher found it very odd that Aura had pushed back their work since they had everything planned out a month in advance. With their plans having been changed, the two women decided to do some more sightseeing. On the morning of April 1st, Miriam Guerra cooked the women breakfast before she headed off to work. Miriam was the woman that they were staying with in Boquete. She said that the girls were quiet and polite. When Chris and Lisanne set out for the day, they had left most of their possessions behind in their room, including their wallet, which right off the bat sounds suspect as fuck to me. Although that said, I guess you don't want to carry around all your earthly belongings while you're in a strange country. Plus, if you're going on a hike, I guess you don't want fully laden pockets. Anywho, the women both made posts on Facebook saying that they had plans to walk around the city, but later, Chris sent her boyfriend a text saying that they were going to go on a hike.
So they got into a taxi and headed for the Il Pianista restaurant. Their taxi driver was a man named Leonardo Arturo Gonzalez Mestinu. The driver dropped the women off at the restaurant, which also happened to be located at the trailhead of La Pianista.
That's the trail.
The trail that they were going to go hiking on, if that wasn't clear. The restaurant is an Italian restaurant with mostly good reviews. I looked it up. Their pizza looks outstanding. Some sources say that, for some reason, Chris and Lisanne took the owner of Il Pianista's dog with them on the hike.
Who was named Blue.
But there is no evidence of this. But people say that the dog came back to the restaurant hours later without the women. The taxi driver claims to have dropped the women off at the restaurant around 1:30 p.m., but evidence later revealed that it was more like 11 a.m. when they arrived. So this is a rundown of the La Pianista Trail. I got this off a website called alltrails.com. Discover this 4.9-mile out-and-back trail near Boquete District, Chiriqui. Generally considered a moderately challenging route, it takes an average of 2 hours and 58 minutes to complete. This trail is great for hiking, and it's unlikely you'll encounter many other people while exploring. The trail is open year-round and is beautiful to visit any time. This beautiful route is ideal for anyone who wants to experience a magical jungle world. Only around 4 kilometers from Boquete, this trail leads through Panama's mystical cloud forest, a truly unique experience. The trailhead is near the restaurant Il Pianista. After approximately 15 minutes, you are surrounded by rainforest and get to enjoy the sounds of splashing water, chirping animals, and singing birds. In addition to the diverse flora and fauna, this hike also offers some picturesque canyons and great viewpoints. Sturdy or waterproof footwear is recommended as this trail is often very muddy.
Did you say murdery?
Nah, man, I said muddy.
On
the way there, you gain around 600 meters in elevation over a length of 4 kilometers, which makes the way back a pleasant walk downhill.
Or so it should. So that's what the two women observed on the hike. Maybe. When they failed to come home that evening, the host family briefly searched for them, but they assumed that they were just staying out late and having a good time. How wrong they were. On April 2nd, when they failed to show up to an appointment that they had with a tour guide, the host family became worried. They contacted the school where the women were supposed to start work, and the school contacted their families and the police to report them missing. And that's why this episode is called Vermist, or Vermist. That's missing in Dutch. Yeah. We're just clever like that. Anywho, the police did not begin to search for the women until April 3rd. You know, missing for 24 hours and all that nonsense. The local authorities searched for 5 days and there was no sign of them. Eventually, their parents were able to source some Dutch detectives and they all flew to Panama together to search for the women. Their parents offered a $30,000 reward for any information leading to the whereabouts of their daughters.
The cab driver was questioned. The host family was questioned. The two Dutchmen that they had contact with were questioned. And then nothing happened for 10 weeks. 10 weeks!
10 weeks!
A woman in a town called Alto Romero found Lisanne's backpack. This town was located about an 8-hour walk from the trail where the women disappeared from. The woman that found the backpack said that she had not seen it in that spot the day before. It was found near the rice paddies that she worked in every day. The contents of the backpack were undamaged, clean, and dry. Several sets of fingerprints and DNA were found on that backpack that yielded no leads.
That were not Chris's or Lisanne's, presumably?
So there was a lot of mishandling of the evidence as the police collected it, and they just all put their dirty hands on it. So there were a lot of fingerprints on there, including Chris or Lisanne's, and then just a lot of fingerprints.
Did you just suggest that police have dirty hands?
Yes. So also inside of the backpack were both of their passports, both of their phones, one water bottle, two pairs of sunglasses, two bras, $83, and Lisanne's camera.
From what I read, two pairs of cheap sunglasses, although I'm not sure the relevance of that. So were there fingerprints on those items?
Yes.
Oh yeah, I guess we just covered that. The dirty police fingerprints.
Yeah. Imagine like 20 cops just standing there and they're all passing around this backpack and rummaging around in it. It was just a badly handled case.
Badly handled backpack?
Yeah.
Also, for the record, US dollars are the currency in Panama.
Oh, that makes sense. I was like, why do they have just $83 randomly? But okay, all right. It's incredibly odd that the backpack was found dry and the contents were also dry. There had been a good amount of heavy rainfall during the 10 weeks between the day they went missing and the day that the backpack was found. The photos that were taken on the camera can be seen on the internet. There was a total of 133 photos. One photo was deleted. Dutch specialists tried to undelete the photo but failed. The only way to delete a photo this effectively is with special software that makes the photo completely deleted from all of existence. This suggests that the photo was deleted from a computer. Yeah. Weird. So, also on the camera, there are photos of streams and trees and scenery. There are a few photos of the women smiling and posing for the camera in their shorts, tank tops, sunglasses, and hiking boots.
Cheap sunglasses.
And there are photos that appear to be taken off-trail, deeper in the jungle.
And I'd like to add that I looked at these photos just in case these smiles were fake. And honestly, they look totally genuine. So I'm personally of the opinion that at this point, at least, these photos were just two girls still having a good time on this hike.
And then there are the images that were taken at night. Some say that these images were taken so that the women could use the camera flash in order to find their way. Most of these images are unremarkable, just pictures of the jungle floor. There are quite a few pictures of the sky, showing rain falling down.
Although you might argue that pictures of the jungle floor are probably somewhat more remarkable than pictures of trees and animals and girls having fun, right?
Yeah, they might have been taking pictures of the jungle floor so they could look at the picture right afterwards and kind of get their bearings. The night pictures go on for hours and even days, according to the camera's timestamps. None of the night pictures show either of the women, except for one photo of the back of Chris's head. In this photo, her hair looks clean and dry, despite the rain and being lost in the jungle. This photo was taken on April 8th, 7 days after they went missing. Can you imagine being lost in the jungle at night? There are no lights. The tree canopy obscures most of the sky so that you don't even have the light of the stars and the moon. There are animal noises constantly around you. Sounds pretty terrifying. I would rather be lost in the desert at night.
I'd rather be lost in your eyes, my dear. Real talk, though. I agree. Stop for a moment, listeners, if you will. And imagine yourself in a dark jungle. It's hot, humid, sticky. You can't see. You're hungry. You're thirsty. You start to realize you might never find a way out. You have no cell reception. Somebody might be following you. The dread sets in. The panic sets in.
The dread.
The panic. The horror.
Horror.
The horror. The horror. So, their phone records are weird too. The hack started around 11 a.m. on April 1st, and this was not a joke. The first failed attempt to call an emergency number happened at 4:39 p.m. from Chris's phone. The second attempt happened 12 minutes later from Lizanne's phone. The following morning, April 2nd, they both attempted to call emergency services again from each phone, about an hour apart. At 10:52 a.m, Chris attempted again. At 1:50 p.m, Chris tried to check for a signal. At 4:19 p.m, Chris again tried to check for a signal and then left her phone on all night. On the morning of April 3rd, Chris attempted to contact emergency services again, followed by another signal check that afternoon and again at 4 p.m. On April 4th, there was a signal check at 10:16 a.m. and again at 1:42 p.m. On April 5th, at 4:50 a.m, there is a signal check and one more at 5 a.m. Then Chris's phone battery dies and there is no further activity. At this point, that's already 5 whole ass days in the jungle.
And it looks like at the start they used both of their phones and then they got smart and were like, hey, let's just use one phone and save the other phone's battery. So Lisanne's phone is still active at this point. At 10:50 a.m, she does a signal check. At 1:37 p.m, an incorrect PIN number was put in. Then a whole day of nothing goes by before, on the morning of April 7th, another incorrect PIN number was put into Lisanne's phone. And this happened again that afternoon. And then several days of nothingness. On the morning of April 11th, an incorrect PIN number was entered into the phone again. Do we want to talk about this, the incorrect PIN numbers?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a little odd. You could assume perhaps that they got separated, but if they just got separated, why would only one of them have both phones? Unless one of them had them in their backpack because, you know, they were both wearing their little short shorts. Maybe one of them couldn't go on and the other one went off to try and find help with both phones. Maybe one of them had died or otherwise. Or maybe it was somebody else trying to enter the PIN numbers. I don't know. What do you reckon?
I'm going with somebody else trying to enter the PIN numbers. But also, after, what was this, 11 days with no food, no water, and just in sheer panic mode, maybe Lisanne just couldn't remember her PIN number.
Yeah, maybe, or perhaps their hands were shaking and they couldn't hit the right numbers. Who knows? Who knows?
The last time Lisanne's phone was switched off was at 11:56 p.m. that day with 22% battery life left, and there was no further activity on this phone. Is it odd that neither of the two women tried to send a text message at this time? Yes, incredibly.
Agreed. Later, authorities found Chris's shorts on the bank of the Culebra, or Serpent, River, 14 hours walking distance away from the backpack. And upstream from that was where they found Lisanne's severed foot inside of her boot. Although, with that said, I read in one article that the official finding was actually that it was the metacarpus. That's the intermediate part of the hand skeleton.
I thought the metacarpus was a toe bone.
Incorrect, incorrect, incorrect.
An additional boot was found, albeit empty. However, it was blue, and Chris's boots were brown. Because the boot was a Dutch brand, it was attributed to the case, even though it underwent no DNA testing and was not shown to Chris's family for identification. They also found a total of 33 bones scattered along the riverbank. Among them were mainly bones from her left leg, and only two of Chris's bones, namely her left pelvic or hip bone and one of the ribs from her right side.
Both of Chris's bones that were found had been bleached. Not just bleached by the sun, but bleached with actual bleach. Lisanne's had not been bleached.
When we say bleached, in fact, there was talk of lime and there was also talk of phosphorus, which would naturally occur in the soil, but not to the concentration that it would have done to the bones, what had actually happened to the bones.
And they found a rolled up ball of Lisanne's chin skin. Chin skin rolled up into a ball. Why does that give me the heebie-jeebies?
Unsure.
It's worth noting that the skin was found 4 months after they went missing. The skin should have been decomposed by this point. Chris's bones were in a further stage of decomp than Lisanne's, suggesting that Chris died first. So Chris's bones were devoid of flesh, yet a fresh piece of Lisanne's meat was found. Lisanne's meat?
Yeah, I mean, it was meat from Lisanne.
Anyway.
Delicious tin meat.
So, a Panamanian forensic anthropologist later claimed that under magnification,
there are no discernible scratches of any kind on the bones, neither of natural nor cultural origin. There are no marks on the bones at all.
And, yeah, he wasn't French, though. Where did that come from?
He kind of went French.
Another thing to note, the cab driver who dropped the girls off at the trail was murdered a year later. His official cause of death was stated as drowning, but he was found face down in a shallow puddle, and he wasn't a fucking toddler. This may have been unrelated, but it's interesting to consider.
So what happened to Lisanne and Chris? Here are the theories. Theory number one. In August, 4 months after the disappearance, a Panamanian prosecutor officially states that the two girls got lost in the jungle and were killed by an accidental falling into the river, and their bodies were smashed against the rocks, causing both their deaths and the breaking up of the bodies. She uses an X-ray analysis of the foot that was found, and it shows a metatarsal fracture during the fall as the basis for this conclusion. She states that some of the nighttime photos were taken near a cable bridge over the Calibra River where some of the remains were found. Because of this statement, the case was officially closed.
But there was no damage or erosion to the bones, right? Not to mention the fact that, I mean, again, I read somewhere that it was actually part of the wrist that was in the boot, which is just fucking odd as well. But anywho, yeah, no damage or erosion to the bones, so...
Exactly, Dan. If the women had been smashed against the rocks, there would have been damage to the bones to prove this. Also, if both girls died in the river, then how did Chris's bones get stripped bare while Lisanne's still had stuff attached to them?
Meat.
Lisanne's meat. The forensics proved that no animals had been at either set of bones, which would surely have been the case if their delicious, soggy, meaty remains had washed ashore. So this theory is bullshit. Other reasons why? Chris's bones had been strip cleaned and bleached. They were not bleached by the sun. Bones take about 9 weeks to bleach in the sun. This can only happen if the bones are laid out in an area that is exposed to the sun every hour of the day. While the bones were found later than 9 weeks after the girls disappeared, they were found in the jungle, under the thick jungle canopy. Even so, Lisanne's bones still had flesh and matter attached to them.
Meat!
Theory number two, drug cartels or gangs. This particular corner of the world does have a thriving trade in human sex trafficking and black market organ selling.
Meat.
In 2014 alone, there were 51 disappearances around this area, and in 2017, a German woman was lost in this exact same part of the jungle, and she was found by three members of a search party who then kidnapped her, hid her in a hut in the jungle, and raped her. This went on for 3 days, and the only reason she escaped is that she cut one of them so badly with a piece of broken bottle that they had to rush him to the hospital, and she escaped.
Was this hut like David Parkeray's toy box?
Yes, but it was a hut instead of a trailer.
Was Fido there?
No. And this theory is kind of debunked because if they had been the victims of organized crime, then their backpack probably would have never been found, and the bones and skin would have never turned up.
I don't know that I agree with that. This is South America. These gangs and cartels are brutal as fuck, and they don't give a fuck and probably have the cops in their pocket. And that's even if whatever evidence is left is sufficient to reach a conclusion anyway. And bones, skin, and some assorted remaining body parts seem to me exactly what you would find if somebody's organs had been harvested.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm still with the drugs or cartels.
You think it's theory two?
Currently, yeah.
Currently. Let's move on.
Until we get to the end.
So excited.
Theory number three. This is the work of either one local or a few local individuals. This person or persons might have murdered these women. And when the case hit international news and the search for the women became more intense with dogs and helicopters and the whole nine yards, they begin to become scared of being caught. So they begin to plant evidence to confuse the investigators. This theory makes the most sense, but it doesn't explain why the women were allowed access to their cell phones. Unless you consider that the calls and the nighttime photographs were not taken by Chris and Lisanne, rather they were taken by their attacker or attackers. But this is a lot of work for a kidnapper to engage in over such an extended period of time.
I certainly agree that evidence was planted. That much almost goes without saying. But again, I would say it was a gang or a cartel thing. Do they harvest teeth? I'm sure they do. And you'd probably roll a person's skin back around their chin so you could get in there and remove them without damaging them.
What the fuck? Teeth? Teeth? Do they sell teeth on the black market?
I mean, I don't see why not. You know, well looked after, young, fresh Dutch teeth. You know, you're going to make dentures for some old dude sitting in his hut raping German ladies?
Oh my God, I don't fucking know. Nobody makes dentures out of human teeth.
Why not? What better to make them with?
Oh, that's just terrifying, Daniel.
And quite possibly true.
Ugh. Theory number four is presented by a YouTuber called Peaked Interest. He has almost 100,000 followers and his channel is really good. So this is his theory, and it's good as hell. The women went hiking up the trail, and at some point after they reached the summit, they realized that they were being followed. This would make sense. This would also explain why they didn't just turn around and go back the way they came. The day before, they spoke to a person referred to as Tour Guide F about this exact hike. The taxi driver also dropped them off at this trail, so that's two people who knew where they were. Peaked Interest speculates that they pushed further into the jungle to try to get away from whoever it was that was pursuing them. They hid sporadically to try and call for help and try to signal for help and to try to lose their pursuer. This explains why they were still using their phones a week after going missing. He says that a week after being lost in the jungle, their attacker finally caught up with them.
Maybe. But the jungle is literally one of the harshest environments to survive in. So I'd be surprised if they were even still alive, unless they were being kept alive. Or somebody else was making those calls. And like you said, at no point did they send any messages, and they didn't even try to call their family back home.
Yeah, I feel like if I was in that situation and my phone wasn't working, I would at least try to send a message to somebody via text.
Yeah, and certainly your family if you feel like at that point your life may be in danger. I would at least want to say goodbye or alert my family to the fact that something bad was happening.
Yeah.
Honestly, Autumn, when you came at me with options for this week's episode and you suggested this one, I was really just hoping for like rabid cannibal tribes in the area. But alas.
And even if there were, the bones would have displayed some kind of marks from teeth or something, just like if an animal had been at them.
Maybe. We have opposable thumbs. We could probably gnaw at a bone without gnawing at the bone. But yeah, possibly so, I suppose. So, all that said, a lot of the people who joined the search party were of the Nabe tribe, who in most part subscribe to a religion, or some argue a cult, called Mamatada.
Mamatada!
Mamatada! And this religion is an offshoot of, you guessed it, Christianity. And those who are not Mamatada believers are actual bona fide fucking Catholics, Jehovah's Witnesses, and Mormons. Yeah, way the fuck down there. And these Nabe people are pretty xenophobic. So I'm not saying they spit roast these girls, either literally or bow chaka wow wow. But they probably don't like all these tourists running around.
Certainly not. Yeah, I wouldn't be a fan of the tourists either, especially if they were white, since, you know, they came and they raided their lands and raped their women and forced religion upon them that they probably didn't want.
Yeah, well, you know, they like it now. you know, going around knocking on people's fucking hut doors while they're trying to rape German ladies.
Anywho, let's talk about the suspects. Maybe it was the taxi driver and he was killed because he threatened to talk about what happened. Maybe he didn't kill them, but he knew enough information that he was a threat to whoever did.
Threat?
A threat. Maybe it was tour guide F. He has a coffee farm that is located right in the middle of the jungle that the women went missing in. He is a tour guide. He has knowledge of the surrounding area. He has one negative review and 45 positive reviews. All of the positive reviews were from groups of tourists. This one negative review was from a single tourist who went with him alone, and she said that he was sexually aggressive towards her and seemed to have an obsession with European women. And he spoke with Kristen Lisanne the day before about that specific trail. Also, the bones were mostly found by him. The woman who found the backpack, she was one of tour guide F's assistants.
Wait, what the fuck? Where was this information earlier? And what did the cops do with this? It seems pretty clear cut to me.
So my theory is that they kind of knew what was going on and they actually really did suspect him. But tourism, that's how they make their money in this town. And if one of their most prominent tour guides is outed as a killer, people will stop coming there and spending their money.
I guess. When you started saying that, I thought the tourism thing sounded a little far-fetched, but yeah, the knock-on effect that it would have on tourism in that town as a whole, yeah, sure, or even Panama as a whole, I guess. I don't know that the cops would care that much, would they? Would cops care about that?
Yeah.
I guess. So, actually, Chris and Lisanne went missing on April 1st, but had arranged to meet with this dude for a guided tour the next day. Or at least that's what he says. So it's odd that they'd have gone hiking the same area the day before they were due to meet with him. Again, pointing the finger very much at
El Machete.
Yeah, this dude carries a big fucking machete with him. Which is, you know, not that odd in the jungle, but if you look up pictures of this guy, you can see how big this fucking machete is.
And it will become slightly less odd, but very much more scary, when Autumn reads the review from this lady in just a few moments.
Somehow, despite all of this, tour guide F was never considered as a suspect. Why? Because he volunteered most of his free time to help search for the girls when they went missing. Planting evidence. I mean, yeah, like, yeah, I'm gonna help you guys and just throw some freaking bones under this tree here. So, this is the aforementioned review written by Sophie J in July of 2019 on TripAdvisor. It took me almost a year to finally post this review. I strongly recommend women to not hire Feliciano as your guide if you're by yourself. It's a big contrast if you look at the other reviews, where Feliciano is described as a very nice person, which he probably is for many people. I have to say, he's very charming, funny, and you can probably, as you will read in the other reviews, have a great day with him. Did a walking tour with him. He's the guide that knows the area by heart. Not long after we left, he subtly started to flirt with me and also touching me, first my hand, but also my arms, shoulder, and legs, even after telling him many times to stop doing that. He wears a big machete and suggested to chop off my legs. This, of course, was a joke, but still.
Was it, though?
He has an obsession for Northern European women, and I felt very unsafe. It's a personal story, but Google his name, and you'll unfortunately find more stories like this about him. And there are photos of him holding his massive machete. His name is Feliciano Gonzalez.
Is that a euphemism? Or was it just his machete?
It was just his machete.
Ah, okay. So there you have it. Feliciano Gonzalez.
He did it.
I reckon.
I think he did it.
Man, I went on TripAdvisor and I kind of want to message Sophie and ask her if she knows who this dude really is. Then again, it is of course quite possible that the review is fake, left by somebody else who suspects him.
Maybe.
So I looked at some of the other reviews too, Seems like the Dutch really like to go to Panama. Most worrying, as he said earlier, Autumn, is that of 46 reviews on TripAdvisor, 45 are 5-star reviews, and just the one that you read above is negative. And even she left 2 stars. Not 1, but 2 stars, despite everything that happened. Like,
oh yeah, I didn't like him letting me in the jungle, but I didn't hate it either.
And some of the reviews are very recent. Here's one written in Dutch by some Dutch chick who made it out alive, written just last year in July 2021. But before I translate it for you, just for a little comic relief at this point, let's have Autumn try to read it in Dutch, because it's gonna be great.
Fin meneer van Wiedelen, op in niet eindgeven in root. We hebben de root, alpinista, gelopen met Feliciano. In Virgil hike. Leave man day he in Vilk. Give or gift over the root. Hit was fien arm. Licker actor him in Tilopin. Zonderbang. Tizin T. Verwalden. OID. Feliciano. Gift ook Vil. Extra informante over the omgiving planting in diary. Oh, he gave her extra information about plants and shit. Be a dizzy root extra fine. Oh, it's a good root. Om that hit underwig neat worth in giving. Feliciano Benedict.
I did it.
Oh my god. Alternatively, Fijne manier van wandelen op een niet aangegeven route. Wij hebben de route El Pianista gelopen met Feliciano. Een vriendelijke, lieve man die je een veilig gevoel geeft over de route. Het was fijn om lekker achter hem aan te lopen, zonder bang te zijn om te verdwalen of iets dergelijks. Feliciano geeft ook veel extra informatie over de omgeving, planten en dieren. Bij deze route extra fijn, omdat het onderweg niet wordt aangegeven. Feliciano, bedankt! For not murdering us, because hey, that last bit said, Feliciano, thanks!
I think I did a good job, especially knowing that the J is silent in all those frickin' words, and there's so many J's.
Okay, so pronounce my mother's name.
Sveiki!
At least you remembered it somewhat, that's nice of you, you're such a nice girlfriend. Okay, so translated, the title of the review says, Nice way to walk on an unmarked route. We hiked the El Pianista route with Feliciano. A friendly, nice man who gives you a safe feeling about the route. It was nice to walk behind him without having to be scared about getting lost or something.
Oh, wow.
Feliciano also gives you a lot of extra information about the area, plants and animals.
Yeah, I told you.
You did.
I did.
Which on this route is really cool, because they're not marked underway. Thanks, Feliciano, for not murdering us.
Thank you for not murdering us. Badonkadonk.
He probably likes a good badonkadonk.
Who doesn't?
Okay, so all that said, the Q&A section is where it gets more interesting. Just 2 days before the date of this recording, on May 17th, 2022, user Matt asked, 2 poor girls murdered in the most horrific circumstances. Give the family some closure and come clean. You know what happened and the crimes that were committed on that day.
So I didn't even look at that section. Kudos to you, Dan, for getting this information for us. I'm going to read the next one. In April 2022, user Tolga asked, What happened to the Dutch girls? To which a user with a South American-sounding name replied, Yeah, no bueno. Feliciano harming innocent Dutch girls? For sure there were groups of killers.
Sure. In August 2021, a Russian user asked, Did you rape and kill Chris and Lisanne?
In June 2021, user Brit commented, This man may be linked to the disappearance and death of 2 European women. Look up Chris Krimmers on YouTube. In the YouTuber account Peaked Interest, he gives a lot of evidence that points to this tour guide as a potential suspect.
To which another user responded 100% and several people upvoted.
In April 2021, user Michael S. asked, "Would like to know about the murder of two girls." To which another user replied, "Ask Feliciano." Also with numerous upvotes.
Holy shit.
Interestingly, any questions asked prior to this time were genuine questions about Feliciano and his offerings. That's offerings, not offings. But yeah, interesting that these events happened back in, what, 2014, was it, Autumn?
Yes.
And yet, all these years later, people are still just hitting him up for tours. It's just nuts to me. Also, for the record, Feliciano's telephone number and email address are on his TripAdvisor page. Just saying.
That number is...
Yeah, we're not doing that.
That's the end of Chris and Lisanne's story.
It is. I mean, unless one day they actually go and convict this stupid motherfucker.
Yeah, I would like to see some justice done and some more investigating. Somebody go down there and investigate this, please.
So, you know how you wanted to go on vacation somewhere sunny for Christmas this year, Autumn?
Yeah!
Well, I'm thinking maybe we get down there for a tour with him. I'll shave off my beard and wear a wig. Use a nice Dutch accent. Oh, Feliciano, you are such a naughty boy!
So what you're saying is you want to get a tour with Feliciano and maybe make him run through the woods scared at night.
I mean... That wasn't it. I guess that would be kind of fun. That would possibly get us in trouble, though. Autumn, I really just wanted to goad him into, like, going after my sexy ginger man boobs.
So you're... What? So you're trying to entrap him into trying to kill you so we can record it and have evidence of him trying to murder you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Now you're getting it. Entrapment. Let's go and entrap Feliciano Gonzalez.
Much better than my suggestion, which is very illegal.
More fun, but illegal, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Also, you know, who doesn't like a bit of cross-dressing in South America, right?
It's the best in South America.
It's my favourite thing to do.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, come support us on Patreon at Seven Circles Pod. Your donations and support can help us elevate the quality of our podcast, and it would mean so much to us.
This episode of Seven Circles was written by Autumn Vale and Dan Griffiths. Seven Circles is produced by Autumn Vale, with sound editing by Dan Griffiths.
Original music by Null Machine and art by Caroline Gates.
You can find us on social media, Facebook at Seven Circles Podcast, Insta at @7_circles_pod, and Twitter at @7circlespod. And don't forget, you can find Feliciano Gonzalez on TripAdvisor, where you are welcome to harass that motherfucker.
Go get him!
But don't say we told you to, because it ain't our fucking fault if you get busted.
No.
So, let's talk about Chris's donut franchise.
What's your favourite donut?
I mean, Feliciano's favourite donut was obviously Krispy Kreme's.
I like the Bavarian cream donuts with the chocolate frosting.
I like the ones with the maple glaze.
Apple fritters are good too.
They're more Danish than Dutch though, aren't they?
I like bear claws.
I don't like the jam-filled donuts, do you?
Fucking love the jam-filled donuts.
You do?
Yes.
They're gross, man. I mean, they're like... That's kind of like biting into a piece of rolled-up chin skin.
Oh, no! And I'll never eat another jam-filled donut again.
Feliciano probably will, though.
No. Oh, what? He needs to stop existing. He's pretty fucking old, though.
Why are you so far away from the microphone, Autumn?
He's pretty fucking old, that Feliciano guy, so...
Feliciano?
Feliciano.
Does he have a lisp now?
No, I do. Are you making fun of my lisp?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of cute, though.
Sometimes I just like a plain glazed donut.
Yeah, I'm still all about the maple ones. Or maybe just kind of dusted.
Yeah, the maple donut's my least favorite donut.
Yeah, but you don't really like maple syrup very much, do you?
Only on waffles and pancakes.
Oh, yeah? You want me to pour some maple syrup on your waffle?
Oh, my God. So one of my customers was making lunch today, and she had a waffle maker, and she was making these tiny waffles, like the shape of bread waffles, and then she was putting, like, fried chicken patties in between them and, like, syrup, and here's your chicken and waffle sandwich.
How American.
Fucking yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so seriously, why was one of these girls called Krispy Kreme?
Her name was Kris Kremers, and we don't make fun of dead people's names, Dan.
Kris what?
Kremers. Kremers.
Millions of donuts.
Donuts for me. Millions of donuts.
Donuts come from a box.
They were put there by a fox cock.
Ewoks. Donuts are put in boxes by Ewoks.
Ewoxes.
Ewoxes. And who puts the jam in them, do you think? How do they put the jam in a donut?
They put a little hole in the bottom and they just...
They just... What?
They go...
Okay. It's weird. I feel like I make that noise sometimes.
A lot.
But I'm not really filling up donuts.
No, you're just filling up your fist.
Wow, man. Are you suggesting that I don't, like, protrude from the other side of my fist, man?
Oh, my God.
Holy shit. Wow. I guess I better join that chode club.
Cake, bye.